This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In 1820, John Quincy Adams wrote in his journal, "Literature has been the charm of my life, and could I have carved out my own fortunes, to literature would my whole life have been devoted." Instead, the gifted writer and deep thinker continued the political tradition set by his father. John Adams was the country's second president. John Quincy Adams, its sixth. Both served just one term. Both were men of deep conviction, deep enough that both took controversial positions in two significant cases in early American history. And throughout his life, John Quincy Adams kept a diary that Fred Kaplan, the biographer of Mark Twain and Abraham Lincoln, among others, calls the most valuable first-hand account of an American life and events from the last decades of the 18th century to the threshold of the Civil War. Fred Kaplan is a professor of English at Queens College in New York. His new biography is John Quincy Adams, American Visionary. He joins us now from the studios of Maine Public Radio in Portland. Fred Kaplan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Delighted to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you. So I'm going to get into it in a moment with you why you consider John Quincy Adams an American visionary. But first, let's just tackle the question we've sort of teased listeners with, and that is, why has, you know, so often history underrated John Quincy Adams? It prefers to remember and venerate his father.
Yes, it does. And it tends to remember and venerate Andrew Jackson, the president who succeeded John Quincy Adams. American history tends to venerate John Adams, the second president, for good reasons, for the right reasons. In the case of Andrew Jackson, in my view, for the wrong reasons. John Quincy Adams' presidency was a difficult and controversial one. It was difficult for him personally and it was difficult for him politically. He came into office as the first president ever to be elected, not by the popular vote, but by the House of Representatives, even though that was constitutionally fine. Lots of people objected. They thought the popular voice was not being heard. So he had a lot of tough rowing upstream politically as president. Also, the policies that he attempted to institute were visionary policies, many of which have real resonance today and are part of our modern American life. But most of them were not liked by many of his contemporaries.
Well, we'll get
in addition, let me just say the obvious. Some people think that John Quincy Adams was a tight-faced, dour, sour New England Puritan. He was nothing of the sort.
Okay, so we're going to talk in a moment as to why that caricature of him has arisen over time, but let's go back to his childhood. Of course, he's the son of John and Abigail Adams, born in 1767, and I see that by the time John Quincy was 10 years old, the elder Adams had been sent to Europe as an envoy during the American Revolution, and he took his son along. What effect did those early years have on the man that John Quincy Adams was to become?
They were immensely influential, of course. He bonded with his father. They were a family of two for many years, in that European period, approximately about 6 years, interrupted by one return home. And he revered his father immensely. John Adams was the overwhelming influence in John Quincy's life. His father was a pedagogue, a teacher, if you will, a diplomat, a politician, but he was his son's greatest teacher, constantly giving him books to read, creating lessons for him, encouraging him to have the same kind of career that he himself had. In addition, of course, Europe. He had Europe for quite a number of years. All of his formative years were spent there until he returned at the age of 18 to enter Harvard College. And then he went to Europe as a statesman. So when he returned to America to become James Monroe's Secretary of State in 1817, he had been exposed to so much European culture, both languages that he was good at learning, culture that he deeply absorbed. So he was probably our most cosmopolitan Secretary of State and our most learned and cosmopolitan president in the entire history of our country.
Well, I see that during that time where he served in the Monroe administration, that he in fact was sort of the intellectual behind what became the Monroe Doctrine.
Yes, he provided Monroe, but with the impetus to create the Monroe Doctrine. In cabinet meetings, he was decidedly outspoken and helped steer Monroe and his fellow cabinet members toward the eventual language of the Monroe Doctrine. He wrote the first draft. He revised the second draft, and much of the language of the doctrine is actually John Quincy's.
Hmm. Well, now let's talk a moment about his term as president, because in reading your book, it seems clear that John Quincy Adams, just as his father, really believed that the American Republic required virtuous leadership, self-sacrificing men. I mean, was this the example that propelled him to the presidency? I mean, was he actively trying to continue his father's legacy?
Yes, I think that is the case. He is, of course, a second-generation American. He is a son of one of the great founding fathers. His great hero, other than his father, was George Washington. He began as a Federalist and gradually became a member of Jefferson and Madison's party, which eventually was the only party for many years, so he became a Republican. And he represented, for better and for worse, the vision of the Founding Fathers carried forward into the early decades of the 19th century. And it gave high priority to leaders elected to public office, not for their popularity, not for their charm, not for their sound bites, but for their integrity, their wisdom, their learning, and their deep commitment to civic values. Mm-hmm. He thought of himself as a man who aspired to be a virtuous man. And that's the kind of man he believed the American people should have and should want to have for president.
Except that he finds himself being president at a time where it seems that the American people were drifting away from that vision of leadership, right? Because they're headed towards a more populist tone that was brought to the office by Andrew Jackson.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So political scientists of distinction and historians of distinction have commented on the fact that he would have been a wonderful president in a previous period. He was the wrong man for the time. My own view is that he had the right policies and the right ideas, but he did not have the political wiliness or commitment to bare-knuckle tactics to implement them, and the country was changing around him. Mm. Well, the country is always changing, not always for the better. And certainly the Founding Fathers, who we revere, by the time we get to Andrew Jackson in 1828, and for all the presidents between 1828 and Lincoln in 1860, 1861, would have been appalled by the nature of the people who are ruling our country and by most of the policies.
Yeah. You know, there is one issue amongst many, but one that really stands out where John Quincy Adams was on the right side of history. I mean, and we're talking about the period in the run-up to what becomes the rending war of American history, the Civil War. Yeah. He writes with such clarity in his diaries and in his papers about slavery and how this is the thing that's going to test America like nothing else, that it could cost the Republic its own life.
This was a theme in the Adams family, going back to John Adams and Abigail Adams from 1770, 1780 on. John Quincy Adams' parents worried that the division between North and South, epitomized by slavery versus free labor, would eventually become a crisis that could destroy the Union that the Founding Fathers had created. In his lifetime, John Quincy saw that coming about. He, like his parents, morally deplored slavery. They, however, were interested in keeping the Union together. By the time John Quincy became president, after the Missouri Compromise, say, in 1819, 1820, he began to see the handwriting on the wall and said that slavery will only be eliminated by an insurrection or a secession that brings a civil war. And for the rest of his life, this was an obsessive preoccupation, worry, and anxiety. Yeah. He began to see that the division between North and South would probably never be settled peacefully.
Well, Professor Kaplan, we have to spend a moment talking about John Quincy Adams's role in the Amistad trials, because I think it's a part of his life and American history which I will shamefully admit I didn't realize how key he was, how central he was to this.
Yes, he was brought into the pretrial legal deliberations by the Amistad Committee, consisting of a number of abolitionists, lawyers, who were eager to use the Amistad trial both to establish a just decision for these poor shipwrecked Africans, and to use it also to further the abolitionist cause, to bring to the attention of the American public how dreadful slavery was.
Just to be clear for folks who don't remember this part of history very well, there were 53 Africans who had been illegally seized by Portuguese slave traders, right? And then they killed the captain, attempted to set sail to Africa, but the ship was then seized by an American brig and brought back to the United States.
Right, off the coast of Long Island, exactly.
And so there was the debate was, were these 53 Africans property or individual human beings?
Exactly.
And it was Adams who stood before the Supreme Court and argued on behalf of these people's humanity.
He did. And he argued, there were a number of lawyers on the case. One of them argued the legal specifics. John Quincy Adams argued in broad terms. He did go over all the various cases, but he made a magnificent moral argument to the Supreme Court about the nature of justice and how America, as a country that founded on the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, should reject property in human beings, and that these Africans, by every count, deserved to be freed. They were not property. They had been illegally taken to Cuba. They were free human beings. And in fact, the moral argument was very powerful, and the case was won.
You know, in reading this portion of your biography, what it brought to mind for me was his father, John Adams, in 1770 defending British soldiers who had been accused in the Boston Massacre because he believed in justice and a fair trial above all.
Exactly. And of course, his son was his father's pupil in that regard, justice above everything. And he anticipates Abraham Lincoln in so many ways in regard to justice above all. The Declaration of Independence, we are all created, human beings are created equal, and that there should never be property in human beings. He anticipates Lincoln in other ways in regard to some of the standard policies that were associated with the Whig Party that Adams was in on the founding of and that Lincoln for most of his life belonged to, binding the Union together, making the Union more prosperous through government, federal government programs to create roads and other infrastructure, to have a sound currency and a national bank, all of which the Jackson administration opposed and every presidential administration opposed between John Quincy Adams and Lincoln. Lincoln had both the good luck and the bad luck to have the war thrust upon him. Mm. He didn't want it, there it was, and things happen. John Quincy Adams had a peaceful administration, if you will. And I give John Quincy Adams as president great credit for running an honest government, for running a government in which everything functioned well, in respecting the economics of the of good budgeting, and in running the apparatus of the country in a way that was peaceful and effective. However, history, of course, doesn't give a president much credit when there isn't anything dramatic happening during his presidency.
The drama would be saved for years later, the years to come.
Yes, that's right. And Lincoln did not want that drama thrust upon him.
Right. Well, Professor Kaplan, we've just got about a minute to go here, and I'm wondering if I might just briefly ask you at the end here, the full title of your book is John Quincy Adams, American Visionary. So what was his vision, and why do you consider him a visionary?
He was a visionary because he believed deeply that that America, in America, virtue would prevail, that once the slavery issue was resolved, America could have, would have a splendid future. But it was a splendid future, as Adams conceived it, that anticipates the kind of modern institutions that we currently have. He anticipated and he pushed for federal government support of education, of science, of all sorts of technological innovations, mm-hmm. of a centralized country in which Americans would be united in looking towards doing things as a national
right.
community.
Well, the new book is John Quincy Adams, American Visionary, and Fred Kaplan is the author of it. He's also a professor of English at Queens College, and he'll be appearing at the Adams National Historic Park in Quincy, Mass. On May 29th. There's more information about it at our website, radioboston.org. Professor Kaplan, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
And that's it for today, everyone. Have a great weekend. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.